Hare Krishna. Today is the disappearance day anniversary of the great Acharya, Srila Madhvacharya. He is the main Acharya in the Madhva Sampradaya. It is explained that there are four primary Vaishnava Sampradayas, by taking shelter of which one can go back to the spiritual world, to Vaikuntha. Sometimes it is said that this material world is like a deep dark well of ignorance, and the four sampradayas are like four ropes that are let into this well. You can catch hold of any one rope and you can come out of this well and go to Vaikuntha. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur at his time bemoaned the fact that hardly anybody was aware of these four sampradayas. And he gave it so much importance that in the birthplace of Mahaprabhu at the Yogapith in Mayapur, where he had a temple constructed, around the temple he had the deities of the four prominent acharyas of these four sampradayas. The four sampradayas, as you know, one is the one that begins from the four Kumaras, ultimately of course from the Lord, but starting from the four Kumaras, that's the Nimbarka Sampradaya. So he installed the deity of Nimbarkacharya, the main acharya in the line of the four Kumaras. Then there was the Sampradaya starting from Brahma, and the chief acharya in that was Madhvacharya. So he had the deity of Madhvacharya installed also. Then there was the Sampradaya that began with Lakshmi Devi or Shri, and the main acharya in that Sampradaya was Ramanuja Acharya. So there was the deity of Ramanuja also. And then there was the Sampradaya that began by Lord Shiva, called the Rudra Sampradaya, and the chief acharya of that was Vishnu Swami. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur also installed the deity of Vishnu Swami. As far as Madhvacharya is concerned, in the line of Brahma Sampradaya, he is especially important to us because we are connected to him. Because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took initiation from Ishwar Puri, who took initiation from Madhavendra Puri. Madhavendra Puri took initiation from Lakshmipati Tirtha, who was from the Madhva Sampradaya. So the connection of the Gaudi Sampradaya in this way is to the Madhva Sampradaya. So we are called the Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Parampara. Brahma because it starts from Brahma, Madhva because he is the chief acharya in the Brahma Sampradaya, the Madhva Sampradaya, and Gaudiya because through Madhavendra Puri and Ishwar Puri we are connected to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and we are followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We worship Krishna as we have been taught by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So even though the Gaudiya Sampradaya is connected by Diksha to the Madhva Sampradaya, Mahaprabhu actually incorporated within his teachings and practices the principles of all four Sampradayas. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that he took two principles from each of the four Sampradayas. We won't go into the details of that, but we'll just talk about the two principles that he took from the Madhva Sampradaya. One was the principle that the deity form of the Lord is not different from the Lord. The deity and Krishna, they have a form, and that's the absolute truth. This was a very important principle he took from there. And the second was the refutation of the Mayavad philosophy. Madhvacharya was extremely strong when it came to refuting Mayavad. Because at the time Madhvacharya appeared, Shankaracharya's Advaita philosophy was widely prevalent. Shankaracharya was very potent. After all, he was a partial incarnation of none other than Lord Shiva. So his preaching and his word jugglery was bewilderingly powerful, and swathes of people all through the land of southern India and even other parts had come under the sway of the Advaita philosophy. So a very, very important part of Madhvacharya's preaching was to establish the Dvaita Siddhanta, the dualistic conception, as opposed to the Advaita, which means the monistic conception, where the living entity thinks that he is one with the Lord, that he is the Lord. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did accept principles from many of all the sampradayas, actually. But with Madhvacharya, he accepted this. Madhvacharya, the name is often confused as Madhavacharya, but they're two different words, actually. He is not Madhavacharya, he is Madhvacharya, not the long A. Madhava is a different name. It's a name of Krishna. But this is Madhva. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta has explained the meaning of the word Madhva. It comes from two words, Madhu and Va. Madhu means happiness, and Va means knowledge. So the bliss of knowledge, blissful knowledge. So that's Madhva. And because he was a great Acharya, so he was called Madhvacharya. So Madhvacharya was born in a very pious tract of land in South India, in the state that is presently known as Karnataka. It was a part of the territory that was reclaimed by Parashuram from the sea. And the whole strip, the western coast, is called Parashuram Kshetra, because Parashuram reclaimed that land from the sea. There is a certain mountain there that used to be very tall at one time, that is called Vimanagiri. And Parashuram shattered that mountain at one time. And then he also established various four tirthas around. And some distance away from the Vimanagiri mountain is one of these tirthas called Dhanush Tirtha. These are four kunds, four small lakes. And the area around Dhanush Tirtha is called Pajaka Kshetra. It's a very holy place. And it is in Pajaka Kshetra that Sripad Madhvacharya appeared in this world almost 800 years ago. Actually, in 1988, I was in Badrinath, and there a huge contingent of all the Madhva Acharyas and their devotees had come to Badrinath, because they were celebrating the 750th appearance anniversary of Madhvacharya. So then you can, how many, 12 plus 22, so that's 772 years since Madhvacharya appeared. He appeared in a family of very pious, devoted Brahmins. His father's name was Narayana Bhatta. And they had been, the whole community of Brahmins there had been brought by the king many generations ago from some other parts of India, and they had settled down here. So his father was a very poor Brahmin, but very pious, very devoted, very cultured. His parents had to undergo a lot of hardships, not only because of their economic condition, but also because they had two sons and both died in infancy. So they were very heartbroken. And they went to the nearby temple of Ananteshwar, and they prayed very fervently to him for a son. And they underwent austerities for 12 years, subsisting only on milk. They lived only on milk for 12 years and prayed to the Lord to grant them a son. Ananteshwar was pleased to bestow his favor upon them in the form of a son who was extremely powerful. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur explains, actually the Madhva Sampradaya, it is the accepted fact, and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta also confirms that Madhvacharya, this child who was born, was not an ordinary child. He was an incarnation of the wind god Vayu, Vayudev. Vayudev appeared in Treta Yuga as Hanuman. He appeared in Dwapar Yuga as Bhimsen, one of the Pandavas. And he appeared in Kali Yuga as Madhvacharya. So therefore, Madhvacharya is considered the third appearance or the incarnation of Vayudeva. So he was very powerful like Vayudev, very brilliant like Vayudev, effulgent like Vayudev. So right from his childhood, he exhibited very extraordinary feats. If you go to Pajaka Kshetra, there is his house there, which is very well preserved, nice. And nearby, there is a big stone. And in that stone, you see an impression of a long snake. And the story goes that one time when Madhvacharya was just a small boy, an infant, he was playing around in that region. He was a very playful young boy. So a huge snake by the name of Maniman came. He was a demon actually in the form of a snake. And young Madhvacharya, his name was Vasudev actually. His parents named him as Vasudev. So young Vasudev saw the snake who was nearby. He was a demon. And he came to attack him. And this young child just pressed the toe of his foot and crushed the head of the snake, of the demon snake. So the impressions of that snake are still in there, and pilgrims and visitors who go there, they always have darshan of that. I'll narrate a couple of these extraordinary incidents that happened in his childhood. One time, Madhyageha Bhatta, who was very poor, had taken some loan from a wealthy man, a moneylender. And he was unable to pay the installments in time. And when this happened continuously for quite a period, the moneylender came and sat in Narayan Bhatta's house and said, "I won't move until you pay me back." So Narayan Bhatta was really in a quandary what to do. Young Vasudev came back home and inquired, "My dear father, why is this gentleman sitting here? You seem to be very upset. What is the matter?" So he said, "Well, my dear son, such and such has happened. I had taken loans from him because I'm a poor man and I'm not able to pay it back to him." He said, "No problem." In the back of the house, there was a tamarind tree. So young Vasudev went there and took some tamarind seeds, a handful of tamarind seeds. And he came to the man, who was a moneylender, and said, Here, I'm discharging the debt that my father owes you." The man said, "What is this? Tamarind seeds? Is this some kind of a joke?" He said, "No, take it." So when he took it in his hand, he saw there were gold coins. So the man was astonished. But anyway, he was happy because he got the gold coins. So he left. The father was also astonished. The tamarind tree still exists. If you go to Madhvacharya's place in Udupi Kshetra, you will still see the tamarind tree over there. And there is a kund at the back in the house, in the compound of the house. It's a typical architecture of houses in that region, and especially in those days. The family would take bath in that pond and then do their religious activities. On another occasion, he went, after he had reached 8 years of age, he had finished his primary education, so to speak. And he went to the house of another Brahmana, who was considered a scholar, as many of the young Brahmana boys did at that time, and he enrolled in his house, in his Gurukul. And he learned the Vedas and other scriptures from this Brahmana while living there, because that was the custom. Now, being a very playful boy, he was constantly doing some mischief or the other. So the guru, the teacher, one time admonished him that you are simply playing all day. Don't pay any attention to your lessons. How will you ever become an intelligent young man? So being so admonished, young Vasudev, who was only about 8 years old at that time, verbatim began to reproduce all the discourses that his teacher had given so far on all the subjects, and he also discoursed on many topics the teacher had not spoken about. And the teacher was struck with wonder. He said, how is it humanly possible that somebody could do something like this? This boy is not an ordinary boy. So very quickly, Vasudev learned everything the teacher had to teach him. He mastered the Vedic scriptures, and then he returned home. When he came home, he was also thinking about establishing the Vaishnava Siddhanta, the fact that Vishnu is a Supreme Lord. At that time, as I mentioned, the Advaita Siddhanta of Shankaracharya was very strongly prevalent. So young Vasudev, he went to his father, Narayan Bhatta, and he was carrying a little stick in his hand, an ordinary small little stick. And he told his father, my dear father, now I want to, that I have finished my studies, I want to dedicate my life to preaching Vaishnavism. And I want to refute the philosophy of Advaita as propagated by Shankaracharya. And I want this propagated Vaishnav Siddhanta propagated everywhere. And the father smiled and said, if it is possible for the stick in your hand to become a huge tree, then it is possible for you to preach Vaishnav Siddhanta and refute Mayavad all over the world. In other words, what the father was saying was, it is impossible. Because it's not possible for a small stick to suddenly transform into a tree. Similarly, how is it possible for a young, small boy like you, only 10 or 12 years old, to go all over the world and establish Vaishnava Siddhanta, especially when the Mayavad group is so strong now? So Vasudeva replied, my dear father, by the supreme mercy, by the mercy of the Supreme Lord, anything is possible. So the stick can transform into a tree by the Lord's mercy. Similarly, by the Lord's mercy, a small boy like me can also preach Vaishnavism and refute Mayavad. And right there, in front of the very unbelieving eyes of Narayana Bhatta, when Vasudev just planted that stick in the soil, lo and behold, it transformed into a huge tree. Proving that this young boy would indeed prove his father's words right. Because his father had said that if the stick can become a tree, then you can preach Vaishnavism. So now the stick had become a tree. So young Vasudeva was all set to become a great preacher, even though he was only 10 or 12 years old. His father became, he was happy in one sense, but he was also a little alarmed because now he felt that this boy is going to take sannyas. I've already lost two boys when they were young, and this is the third boy. Somehow by Ananteshwar's mercy, we have received him, and now it seems like he's becoming too renounced. And he has too much of missionary zeal, so I will lose him. So he started making plans to marry Madhvacharya or Vasudev. Vasudev got wind of these plans. So he went away to another great acharya called Achyuta Preksha. And he served him for some time with the idea that he would eventually take sannyas from him. Now Achyuta Preksha was the disciple of another great Vaishnava called Prajna Tirtha. Now it so happened that when Shankaracharya was about to leave this world, his disciples led by Pada Padma and others came to him and said, my dear master, what are your parting instructions for us? So Shankaracharya gave them many parting instructions. Among them, one instruction was that there is this Vaishnava called Prajna Tirtha, Yati. Yati means a sannyasi. And he is very strongly preaching the Dvaita Siddhanta. Dvaita means that the Jiva and Krishna or the Lord are separate. Shankara was preaching Advaita, the Jiva and the Lord is one. So he is a threat to our movement. This is how Srila Bhaktisiddhanta narrates it. So he said, you go and convert him to the Advaita way of life and of thought. Because otherwise he will be a great threat to our movement. So soon after Shankara departed, and the disciples went on to carry out his instructions. And then Padma remembered the instruction about Pragyatirtha Yati. So his followers went up to Pragyatirtha Yati and they began to harass him like anything to convert to the Advaita school of thought. This harassment became so intense that they actually one time burnt down his mutt. Mutt means the monastery. They even burnt many of the manuscripts that he had written about Dvaita Siddhanta. They stole his sannyas staff and his water pot. They began to ridicule him publicly in many ways because they were very strong. You see, in numbers, they were very large. So Pragyatirtha was so harassed by them that he externally accepted their way of life, including the Tripundra. Pundra means the lines, three means three, the horizontal lines like this. The Shaivites, the Advaitavadis, their tilak is three lines, parallel lines on the forehead. Whereas as Vaishnavas, we put the Urdhva Pundra. Urdhva means upwards. So our tilak is upwards. We never cross the line because it is said that Lord Vishnu resides in the space between the tilak, the two lines of the tilak. So crossing that part is not considered a devotional thing to do. So Pragyatirtha, for the sake of just survival, he did that. Externally, he acted as an Advaitavadi, but internally he was a Vaishnava. Similarly, his foremost disciple, Achyuta Preksha, did the same. So Achyuta Preksha used to live in the Ananteshwar temple, and he would come and worship there. So the Pada Padma and the other followers of Shankaracharya became satisfied. Okay, now they have become Advaitavadis and our mission is accomplished. So they went back. Meanwhile, Achyuta Preksha continued on with his Vaishnava beliefs. And young Madhva, who was 10 years old when he came there, began to serve him and learn under him. And every day young Madhva, he was not Madhva, he was Vasudeva at that time, began to expound on Dvaita Siddhanta. And Achyuta Preksha was very happy to hear this. And at the age of 12, he repeatedly petitioned Achyuta Preksha to give him sannyas. Only 12 years old. Even till today, it is a tradition in the Madhva Sampradaya that many of the sannyasis, they became sannyasis at a very young age. One Matha, Pejavar Mat Swami, he's now 80 years plus, maybe nearing 90. And he took sannyas when he was 7 years old, 7 year old boy. In India, it is a custom, actually. The community from which I come from, it's also an Advaitavadi Sampradaya, it's Smartha, hardcore Shaivas. They are this kind. And in that community also, the tradition that the gurus have become sannyasis when they were boys, 6 years old, 7 years old, 10 years old, 12 years old. So this was a fairly common tradition at that time. So Madhvacharya or Vasudev didn't get permission from his parents. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says that there are certain people who say that you should take the permission of your parents before you become a sannyasi, or even before you practice religious principles. But this is materialistic thinking. He said we should follow the example of Madhvacharya. So he says that basically if you take sannyas, you don't have to take permission from your parents. Of course, in some cases they did. Shankaracharya did actually trick his father and mother, his parents, into giving him sannyas. He was about to be caught in the legs of a crocodile and he said, you give me sannyas, you give me permission, blessings to take sannyas, otherwise the crocodile will catch me. So they said, yeah, take sannyas, but we want you alive. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta says that Madhvacharya didn't have to resort to anything like that. He just took sannyas. He went away, much to the distress of his doting parents. So at that time, Achyuta Preksha gave him the sannyas name, Ananda Tirtha. The word Ananda means bliss. Tirtha, generally speaking, means a holy place, but it also means knowledge. So blissful knowledge. And the word Madhva means the same thing also. So he later became known as Madhva or Madhvacharya. Another name that he received was Purna Pragya. So he's also called Purna Pragya Tirtha. Different names for Madhvacharya. So Madhvacharya very forcefully began to preach the Dvaita Siddhanta everywhere. He was very potent, very powerful, and many, many people became his followers. He went into pilgrimages, or he went into preaching journeys into southern India, and he went into the headquarters of the Advaitavadis. Many came to challenge him, and he defeated them and made them Vaishnavas. In fact, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta says that Shankaracharya had, in his first appearance, departed long ago from this world. But he came a second time, and he appeared in a certain place there, where Madhvacharya was preaching very strongly. And he came to challenge him face to face, and he said that for anyone to have the right to speak on the Vedanta Sutra, you should have first written a commentary on it. So then Madhvacharya challenged him and said, "Be that as it may, but I want to challenge you to debate your Siddhanta of Advaitavad. Do you have the power to come and argue with me?" And there was a debate, and Madhvacharya prevailed easily. So Madhvacharya's presentation was very systematic, very thorough, very logical, and he would quote also from different scriptures to establish the ultimate conclusion that the Supreme Lord is an eternal person. And we, as the infinitesimal jivas, must serve him, and that is our eternal position. So Madhvacharya converted many, many people like this. One time he took his disciples to Badrinath, and there he taught them his commentaries on the Bhagavad Gita. And at that time, as they were sitting, the disciples were astonished to see an effulgent light coming in and entering into Madhvacharya's mouth. And then Madhvacharya, once he regained his composure, he understood that it was Vyasadev who had actually brought him here to Badrinath. Much later, he came to Badrinath for a second time. And it is described that his disciples were unable to keep pace with him. He was very physically strong. He was well built. Both Ramanuja and him, they're very well built. Very physically strong. After all, he was Vayudev. And it is also said by the Madhvas that on the way to Badrinath, when the disciples were getting tired and couldn't keep up with him, he told the disciples, "You wait here, I'll come." And he jumped from peak to peak, mountains of the Himalayas, and reached Badrinath. He took a real shortcut to go there. And there he had darshan of Vyasadev. Vyasadev told him many nice things, gave him many good instructions. And therefore, in our sampradaya, we have the connection of Madhvacharya with Vyasadev. There was that shiksha connection. Although his Diksha connection was with Achyuta Preksha. Achyuta Preksha was also connected to Lord Narayan, the Hansa Avatar. The Hansa Avatar instructed the four Kumaras, Brahma instructed the four Kumaras, and that parampara came to Achyuta Preksha. But Madhvacharya was also connected through Vyasadev, through Shiksha. So in our parampara, we see after Vyasadev, there is Madhvacharya. So he was blessed by Madhvacharya to write his commentaries also further. He came back empowered. On the way to Badrinath, Madhvacharya displayed extraordinary physical prowess even. On a couple of occasions, they were attacked by bands of dacoits, and single-handedly Madhvacharya defeated them. On one occasion, a tiger attacked his disciple, and Madhvacharya physically grappled with the tiger and drove him away. So such incidents in his life have been recorded by his authorized biographers. One time as he was passing through, the local king was digging a big well, a pond actually. And he saw, here are some few strong men coming. So he said, he instructed them to get engaged in digging also. But Madhvacharya acted in such a way that he got the king to do the digging and he left. So many such incidents like this are recorded. Soon he came back to Udupi. He converted Shobhana Bhatta and many other great scholars who became Vaishnavas, became his disciples. He came back to Udupi. At Udupi, he actually established 8 monasteries called Ashtamatha. And he initiated 8 of his brahmachari disciples as sannyasis. And they became the chief sannyasis of each of these mathas. He also gave sannyas to one grihastha, follower, disciple of his, who later became Padmanabhacharya. In that way, the Udupi Math was established. When he came back from the north, the present deity of Lord Balakrishna in the main Udupi temple was not there. One time, Madhvacharya went to the sea to take bath. And as he was walking along, it's a couple of miles there from Ananteshwar temple where he served to the seashore. As he was walking, he was composing many poems in praise of Lord Narayan. He composed 5 chapters and then he reached the sea. When he reached the shore, he found that in the distance there was a ship that had somehow got stuck in the sand. And the captain of the ship was hapless. He was trying to move the ship, but he couldn't. Madhvacharya took out his upper cloth, the uttariya, and he began to wave it. And with just a couple of gestures like that, the boat was released from the sand. Because he is the incarnation of Vayudev, so he just impelled the wind to move in such a way that the boat was released. The captain was astonished and he came up to Madhvacharya on the shore and offered him respects and said, please take anything that you like from my boat. So Madhvacharya said, I'm a sannyasi, what do I need all these other things for? What else do you have? So he saw some ballast. You know what ballast is? It's weight that is kept at the bottom of a boat to balance it, to give it some balance and weight in the water so it doesn't tilt over. So he said, yes, this is, what is this? This is Chandan. Oh, it's Gopi Chandan. Yes, please give me the Gopi Chandan. The boat had come from Dwarka. So Madhvacharya carried this huge lump of Chandan and then it cracked open to reveal the most beautiful deity of Balakrishna. Krishna in his boyhood form, childhood form. In one hand he carries a grinding stick and in the other hand he carries a grinding rope and he is in a standing posture. Now this deity has a history, a beautiful history that goes back to Krishna in Dwarka. Rukmini Devi was fascinated by Krishna's Vrindavan pastimes and she wanted to. One time Krishna demonstrated the childhood pastimes to Devaki because Mother Devaki had missed out on his childhood pastimes. She had given birth to Krishna and then Krishna left. And she saw Krishna again only when he was 10 to 11 years old in Mathura. So she missed out the most enjoyable period of the child's life that a mother enjoys. The whole childhood, the Balya and the Pauganda till the age of 10. So Krishna at her request transformed himself into a small child again and Mother Devaki was able to for a short while relish the childhood form of Krishna which she had missed. seeing. Rukmini Devi heard about this and she said, I also want to see this. But then, you know, for a wife to relate to the husband in his boyhood form, childhood form is awkward, you know. Because she's married. For the mother, Devaki, it's one thing because, you know, she's a mother. But the wife, when she can't see the husband as a boy, it doesn't make sense. So Krishna says, okay, I will transform myself into the deity. So then Krishna became Balakrishna. He had the deity. And Krishna personally installed this deity in Dwarka. And Rukmini Devi would worship that deity. Now when the pastimes of Krishna were wound up by his own sweet will, then he departed for the spiritual world. And you all know the pastime of how Arjuna was given responsibility for the queens of Dwarka and then he had to escort them and so on. It's there in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So when Arjuna was about to do this duty, before he left, he took this deity and he kept the deity safely in the Gopi Kund because he didn't know what else to do with it. So he buried the deity there for safekeeping and it remained there for more than 4,000 years. Till when this merchant must have bought it from somebody who must have excavated the Gopi Chandan from there. And that's how the word Gopi Chandan comes, because it's from there. So that's how that was the original deity that was worshipped by Rukmini Devi, that was manifested by Krishna personally. And this was the deity that Madhvacharya got. Now this deity, when it appeared, everyone offered respects. 35 men could not lift that deity. But Madhvacharya very easily, single-handedly lifted the deity and carried him all the way back to the temple of Ananteshwar. Actually, interestingly enough, right on the seashore there's another temple, and that is the temple of Balaram. It is said that along with Balakrishna, Balaram's deity was also there. Unfortunately, many of the Madhvas do not accept Balaram as a Supreme Lord, just as they do not accept Srimati Radharani in the way that we understand her. They accept Radharani as just an ordinary gopi. Similarly, they accept Balaram just as an ordinary gopa. But anyway, the deity of Balaram is there. It's called Malpe, this place. So Madhvacharya carried the deity back and then installed the deity. And the temple still exists today. The deity is still there, the very same deity of Balakrishna that is worshipped from that time. So a very, very ancient deity. Madhvacharya continued to remain there in Udupi. He traveled again extensively. Many, many learned scholars and others became his disciples. And Madhvacharya's movement was spreading rapidly. He continued on like this, preaching. He wrote many, many literatures, like the Mahabharata Tatparya Nirnay, where he wrote commentaries on the Mahabharata. And his disappearance took place on this day, this tithi, in the Ananteshwar temple. As he was sitting there, he had a certain place where he would sit every day and give discourses on the scriptures. And one time, when the demigods themselves had assembled to see him, and they were showering flowers on him as he was speaking on the Aitareya Upanishad, he departed from this world. He just suddenly disappeared from the vision of everyone assembled there, and there was great lamentation. So the place where Madhvacharya was sitting when he disappeared can still be seen through a window. When you do parikrama of the temple, there's a certain place you come in, there's a window, you look inside and you see the room where he would give discourses, his disciples would sit and hear, and his seat has been preserved. That's the seat on which he was sitting when he disappeared. It is said, however, that he is present in invisible form in Udupi, but he's still in visible form in Badrinath. He is visible to only those who have the eyes. Everybody cannot see him, actually, physically. But that is why Badrinath is so important for the Madhvas, because Vyasadeva is their Paramaguru, and Madhvacharya is still there. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur explains that he is one of the Chiranjivis, just like Ashwatthama and Parashuram, Bali, and so on. They are going to live very long lives, even Hanuman, till the end of this Manvantara of Vaivasvatu, of Vivasvan, this Vaivasvata Manvantara. And at the end of this Manvantara, then Madhvacharya will re-enter into the body of Vayu. That's where Srila Bhakti Siddhanta ends his description. The Madhvas, however, say that at the end of this life, at the end of this life of Brahma, Madhva will become the next Brahma. That is the statement of the Madhvas. So today is Madhvacharya's disappearance day. We can pray at his lotus feet that he can impart into our hearts the same staunch faith that he had in the process of devotional service in his bhakti to the Supreme Lord. By the mercy of such great acharyas, we can overcome the obstacles that are presented by Maya and move ahead in our Krishna consciousness. Srila Madhvacharya ki jai. Srila Madhvacharya disappearance day anniversary ki jai. Hare Krishna.